Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm Larry, and I'm working with Scott today to bring you messages. In the second hour of this show, we like to present Yahweh's Torah, and hopefully we can shatter some religious myths by doing so. And with that, I want to talk about the concept here, the idea that that Yahweh is this giant ocean, and Yahusha is a part of that ocean. In fact, he tells us that that Yahusha, Yahweh saves, and that defines himself and his mission, is a part of me, diminished, and he has to be diminished because Yahweh is a being of pure energy. If he didn't dial his energy source down and he visited us as Yahweh, imagine standing next to a piece of radiation, you know, of pure energy, it would melt you. So I understand, you know, Yahusha is Kodesh Kodesh. So in other words, he's a part of Yahweh in a diminished state, in order to enter our human reality here on this planet. And the Ruach is Kodesh. It's written Kodesh Ruach. Unfortunately, that's been corrupted to Holy Spirit. Now, holy was actually, that's a derivative of the same place they get the sun halos. It comes from the sun god Helios. We're not to be using those kinds of phrases because they sound religious, and they are dripping in religion, and they're dripping in a pagan past. And we're to be walking out of Babylon, and we're to be using the terms that he does. So if you want to say Kodesh, say Kodesh. If you want to say set apart, which is what it means, it's set apart from whom? Who is the Kodesh Ruach set apart from, Scott?
I'm sorry, I did not hear the question. I was.
Who is the Kodesh Ruach set apart from? Set apart from Yahweh, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, I want to read here in Yob. It means Yah's Lamb, and it's been corrected to Job, which has no meaning at all, from what I can tell. And this is what he says. He says, indeed, the Ruach, she, in mortal man, and the Nesama of the Almighty provide understanding that reaches them. And that's Yob 32:8. I want to also go through Masal, which is it means word picture, and that's been corrupted to Proverbs. It says, children listen to the discipline of a father and give attention to no understanding, for I gave you good instruction. Do not forsake my Torah. For I was my father's son, tender, and the only one in the eyes of my mother. Then he taught me and said to me, let your heart hold my word. Get wisdom. Get understanding. Do not forget and do not turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not leave her. Again, we're talking about the Ruach. And let her guard you. Love her. Let her watch over you. You know, that white clothing, that cloak, that lasts forever and it doesn't corrupt. Moths can't eat it. That's that covering of the Ruach. She brings you esteem when you embrace her. She gives your head a fair wreath. She shields you with an adoring crown, Hear, my son, and accept my words. Let the ears of your life, be many. I have taught you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in a straight path. When you talk When you walk, rather, your steps shall not be hindered. And if you run, you shall not stumble. Hold fast to discipline. Do not go. Watch over her, for she is your life. Do not enter the path of the wrong, and do not walk in the way of the evildoers. Okay, that's Masal 4 through 14. Okay, now it becomes clear to me that we're talking about the Father, Yahweh, and the she, or the mother, Ruach. Do you have any problem with that, Steve?
Scott? No, I have no issue with that.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. No, I don't have an issue with what you said. No.
I don't see any way around that. I think it's very clear, Scott, that what we're talking about here is we're talking about the Ruach. And she is the one shielding us, caring for us, feeding us. In Job, it says right there, it says, indeed, the spirit, Ruach, she, in mortal man, and the Nesama of the Almighty provide understanding which reaches them. Okay? So what we've got with Yahweh, and we're not saying he with a male sex organ or she with a vagina. Yahweh doesn't have sex organs, but he does have a nurturing side. And it's important that people come to understand that. I explained this to a woman once, and she goes, "Oh, you're tied up in some pagan deity." And then she showed a picture of some ancient Egyptian pagan deity that had two sex organs on it. Well, Yahweh doesn't have sex organs, but what he does have is the ingredients of a family built into himself and into his plan. That's why he established a Bereath covenant. Bereath is based on the root word Baith, which means what? Home and family. So he established a covenant, and what did men do with that covenant? They corrupted it, and they established religions on top of it. And then what we need to do today, and what I'd like to present today, is how they did that. And the first thing that they really did was they got rid of all things Yah. Masiyah, the one who does the work of Yahweh, becomes Masiyach. Yahweh is no longer Yahweh. He becomes Adonai, or my Lord. You see, suddenly this personal relationship where Yah's name is very involved, it gets twisted ever so slightly, and these things begin to change the Bereath covenant and the Baith, the family and the home, into a religious ceremony. Now, according to Yahweh, he created Adam for the purposes of association and relationship. He did not create Adam for the purposes of a religious instrument. Would that be fair to say?
That'd be very fair to say. He created him so that way he had somebody to talk to, somebody to teach.
Right. To talk with, to teach, to grow in what? A relationship. One of the things I've found about this world, no matter how many things you have, no matter what home you live in, no matter what car you drive, without an enriching relationship, they really mean next to nothing. Relationship is the wine of life. It's the most beautiful thing any of us will ever have in our lives, is our rich and rewarding relationships. That's been my assessment.
I agree with you 100%.
Okay.
I would get rid of any sort of material good I had. I'd rather lose that in a second over anybody that I cared for. So, yeah.
Right. I mean, and what we see in our lives and our fabricated reality, if you will, is there's a lot of fluff, There's a lot of nice things, but the best thing any of us will ever have is a rich and rewarding relationship filled with love and caring and laughter and even tears, you know, because there is wisdom in the house of lamentation. There really is.
You do need to have tears so that way the good times mean more. I mean, if everything was always happy, you wouldn't know what happy was.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to go back to Shemoth 2012, which is something I think you covered yesterday. It says you should choose to carefully consider, view as worthy, enormously value, and significant accordingly the symbolism of your father and that which is represented by your mother for the purposes of continuously lengthening your days within and upon the Almighty's land, which relationally, as a blessing, Yahweh, your Elohim, has actually given to you. Now, note, it does not say, honor thy mother and thy father, which is what most popular religious books errantly scribe in there. We're to carefully consider, view as worthy and enormously value and significant, okay? And you know, one of the things Robin pointed out yesterday is we have a call stem perfect there, so it's going back to Yahweh. And, you know, I don't think that it's talking about our biological mother and father. You know, I went through this with a couple of people, and they thought, wow, this makes so much sense to me now. But there was one woman I was talking about, her father was a drunk and a child molester. I mean, how are you going to honor such a person? Well, you're not. It says, you know, if you're going to carefully consider and respecting one's human parents, it would be, you know, counterproductive. You know, further, our biological parents are seldom, if ever, awesomely important, enormously great, massive, or glorious. You know, and then you got to understand that just before this in Shemoth, what was Yahweh saying? He was condemning their fathers. Why? Because they decided to look at Yahweh in a religious light and start turning this Baith, this family covenant, into a religion. So he was certainly not telling them to follow their fathers. This is Larry. I'm almost Scott. And, you know, we're going into the Torah here and, you know, examining Yahweh's words and trying to get away from the corruptions that that the religious scribes have put into the religious material that, you know, most people read today. And I understand Robin's on the line. Robin, do you have something you'd like to say?
Well, yes, and good morning, Larry. Good to hear your voice. You know, with reference to Glenn and his metaphor yesterday with regards to this prescription or statement, you know, he was making the point that Yah was making making a metaphor out of this statement. But the fact is, we are the metaphor. This whole thing could have been designed any number of ways, but he desires a family, and he created families, and it hopes that that will be returned to it.
Yeah, so, can I share something with you here, Robin? I mean,
sure.
This is out of Malika, and that means messenger. They call it Malachi today, but it's Malachi. And it says, my familial covenant relationship exists with him, life and salvation. I gave them reverently and respectfully. He reveres and respects me on account of the presence of my name. He is awesome and astonishing. What's he talking about here? My familial covenant relationship exists with him, life and salvation. I gave them reverently and respectfully. He reveres and respects me. On account of the presence of my name, he is awesome and astonishing. The trustworthy trustworthy and reliable Torah will exist in his mouth. Now, he's talking about Yahusha, isn't he?
Yes.
Wickedness will not be found in his lips. In healing, reconciliation, and uprightness, he walks with me, he reconciles, returns, and restores many from sin. The trustworthy and reliable Torah will exist in his mouth. Now that's, and it says, for the lips of the clerics should carefully observe and revere knowledge and understanding, searching the Torah from his mouth, because indeed he's Yahweh's messenger. Then he goes on to say, as for yourselves, you've turned away from the way, causing many to stumble by your laws. You corrupt and invalidate the familial covenant relationship. Yahweh of the assembled helpful envoys, and of Yahweh the assembled helpful envoys. Now that ends in Malachi 2.8. Now, while that passage is directed specifically at the rabbis and their oral laws, it also can be carried over to all the religious laws and things that we see today, from Catholicism to Mormonism to any religious ceremony that you see. Now,
well, it also smacks the personal introspection.
It what? I'm sorry, Robin. I had a hard time hearing you there.
Right. It also smacks of personal introspection, where you should be doing a self check per se.
Okay.
Addressed to them, but we can all use that.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I want to point out here is that's pretty clear that what's coming out of Yahusha's mouth is what? It's Torah observant, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, let's go to the witness writings, and there's no such thing as a New Testament. There were witness writings that were corrupted, and the concept of a New Testament was put in book form by Marcion, who was really anti-Semitic. He hated the Jews, and his first New Testament actually was all Paul's writings, and then letters produced by Luke, who was Paul's historian. He claimed that all the disciples weren't worthy to present Yahweh's words. As a matter of fact, he claimed that Yahweh was named Dermuge. I think he made that name up out of whole cloth because it can't be found anywhere in scriptures. But let's go to Matanyahu 10:35. And he says, Yahusha says, I've come to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. Now, does that sound like honor your mother and your father biologically to you?
He brings division based on your awareness and your relationship with him.
Was he Torah compliant?
He was Torah observant, yes.
Okay, observant. Yeah, that's what I meant. Okay. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. This is Larry. I'm on with Scott, and we have Robin on the phone. What I covered there in Malike is that Yahusha was Torah observant, and yet he says that he came to bring division, father and son, mother and daughter. And, so we go back to, the religious copy edit, honor thy mother and thy father, as in biological mother and father. And obviously that's not what's being spoke of here, because Yahusha was, 100% Torah observant. And, he's not going to tell somebody to break the Torah. And I'm going to leave it at that, but it's pretty obvious to me. If it came out of his mouth, it's a Torah teaching. And when he says he's going to set son against father and daughter against mother, the reason being is that you're going to choose to follow the father. And we're told really to call no man father other than who? Yahweh. Isn't that right, Robin? Is she still on, Scott, or... Okay.
Yes, he did. And, okay. And said that no man should have authority over another man.
Okay. So when we're honoring our father and mother, we're really honoring who? Yahweh and the Ruach, aren't we?
Yahweh, absolutely.
I want to get into some other religious copy edits that really bother me. And they bother me for a number of reasons, but the big thing is it changes the very nature of Yahweh. You know, there's a word, Yirah, and it means, in most cases, when it's talking about Yahweh, it means respect. But it can mean fear. And I want to
hear.
What's that? I'm sorry, Robin.
Or revere.
Revere, respect, yeah.
Yes.
Like Mount Moriah would be a good example. That means respect and revere Yahweh.
Yes.
That's what, and it was Moriah before it was Mount Moriah. I want to read from Yashayahu 29:13-14, and this is out of the extant material from the Dead Sea Scrolls. For so much as people approach me with their mouths and with their lip service, yet they remove their hearts from me. Their fear, which is Ira, towards me exists because it is taught from man-made traditions learned by rote. Now, what you're going to find if you look into a standard popular Bible or any of your standard religious material, which has been heavily copy edited for the most part, it's going to say that. It's going to say their fear toward me exists because it is taught from man-made traditions learned by rote. But then you're going to look up Psalms and things like that. It's going to say things like, the beginning of wisdom is the fear of the Lord, right? Well, first of all, his name ain't Lord, it's Yahweh. And a Lord sort of stands over people, causing them to shake. He rules over them. He tells them by command what they're going to do. And so what happens here is that Yahweh is saying their fear toward me. He's certainly not saying their respect of me or their reverence of me. He says their fear toward me exists because it is taught from man-made traditions learned by rote. Now, I was looking to see, you know, where is fear really coming from? And, you know, I can see a lot of fear and trembling here in Hosea. That means he saves, by the way. We call it Hosea. When Ephraim spoke, there was trembling and terror. He exalted himself in Israel, but through the Lord Baal. He did wrong and he died. Okay? That's Hosea 13:10. So when you see fear and trembling and somebody trying to associate it with the creator of the universe, we know that's really brought to us by who? Well, by Lord Baal. And who is that? Well, that's just another moniker for the enemy, for Satan, for Halal ben Shakar. And that's his name. I want to go through this because, you know, religion ticks because of fear. So all things that are relational are changed to create fear. As an example, mitzvah, which is really a declaration of a prescription of life, a statement made by Yahweh, becomes what? It becomes a command, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
You know, like the Ten Commandments. Yahweh allows free choice. He doesn't command anything. He makes an offer, and he says, look, I want you to accept my invitations to life, and here's the path I want you to follow, and I'll know that you're hearing me. You understand my nature. But, you know, we see words like command, which they don't really mean command or commandment. We see a word, law, which is really, Torah does not mean law. We have people wanting to get on their knees, And when you see things like fear and law and get on your knees and pray and so forth, an antenna better go up because there's a pretty good chance you have a religious copy edit here.
And, religion actually comes from the root to bind.
I'm having a hard time hearing you here, Robin. What did you say?
Religion, actually, the roots of religion come from the words binding, ligaments, bind with ligaments.
Yeah, it does. It means to bind. Exactly.
Yes.
The very term religion means to bind. Here's an example of what Yahweh really wants, and this is going to be right in the Torah, which is Bereshith. It means in the beginning. Today, most people are going to know it as Genesis 17:3-4. And, you know, before Abraham knew Yahweh, his name was Abram, wasn't it?
Yes.
Okay, and we look at this, and it says here he's meeting Yahweh for the first time, and Abram fell on his face, and Elohim spoke with him to say, "Here I am. Look at me. My familial covenant relationship, which is Bereith, is with you. You shall be the father of many enriched people from different races and places." And that's Bereshith 17:3-4. Now, Yahweh writes, and this is some, I probably would have blown by that, but it's beautifully put here. It's hard to see up when you're looking down, which is why Yahweh said to him, "Here I am, look at me," which is the opposite of Catholic and Islamic prostrations, or where, you know, people are looking down and they're almost sad and they're praying, and in these public assemblies where they're worshiping the Lord. You know, men are prone to falling down and they've been conditioned to bow down, but Yahweh wants to lift us up. You know, so that we can look at him, we can see him eye to eye, we can have an association with him. You know, having said the obvious, scribes can change a declaration or a statement to the word worship. You know, Yahweh's name was changed in favor of the Lord. And that tells us really a lot more about the scribe's ambitions than it does about Yahweh's ambitions, doesn't it?
Indeed it does.
You know, later, we find absolute confirmation that the covenant or the family relationship with Yahweh is a relaxed affair. And I'm going to read this in Bereshith, or Genesis 17:17. Now, remember, he was called Abram before.
Yes, he was.
And this is when he was groveling and bowing down, and Yahweh said, "Hey, come on, stand up, look me in the eye, you know, look up here." And this is what he says. "And then Abraham," let me get down here. And this is right after, let me put this in perspective. This is right after Yahweh tells Abraham that he's going to give him a son. Now, at this point, you know, Abraham's 100 years old. Sarah's 90 years old. "And when Abraham..." And then Abraham fell on his face and he laughed, saying to himself, "What is the purpose of a son being born to a 100-year-old man? And what of Sarah? How's a 90-year-old daughter going to conceive and bear a child?" So here we have Yahweh making a prophetic proclamation to Abraham, and now that Abraham knows him, instead of Abraham saying, "Yes, dear Lord," or following on his face, now that he knows the very nature of Yahweh, what does he do? He did fall on his face, but he didn't fall down to grovel. He fell down laughing.
Now, so you got to be a pretty stout 100-year-old to be able to, have children.
Yeah, that's true. But what we see here is that Abraham fell down with laughter, muttering under his breath. He didn't get down. down on his knees in a prostrated position and began worshiping and saying, "Oh, thank you, dear Lord." That's not what he did. He fell down laughing. Matter of fact, Sarah was standing at the tent, and she looked over there and said, "What's this, Yahweh? Miracles?" And she smiles. So, you know, everybody's laughing at Yahweh, and I suppose that at that point that's, you know.
It's a blessing. Maybe that was the desire of their heart. And they were laughing
I'm sure it was, Robin, but the point here is there's no worship.
And there's no Ishmael yet, you know. Yes, that's true. There's no worship. No, they're confident enough to say, I can laugh and be jovial with the blessing.
Yeah, well, he can fall down on his face laughing when he gives a prophetic proclamation, and Sarah saying, "What's this, Yahweh? Miracles?" And of course, the name of the son, the first son of the covenant, is Yitzhak, which means laughter, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, it doesn't mean prostrated. It doesn't mean submission. But Ishmael does, doesn't it? And could he ever be a part of the covenant according to Yahweh?
Absolutely not. N-O, big capital letters.
So do you think Yahweh might be interested in enriching relationships, or do you think he's into submission?
Oh, man, no. He's extending his hand. He's extending his hand to us. He's reaching out to us in an invitation, in a gentlemanly way.
Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm Larry, and I'm on with Scott, and we have Robin on the telephone with us today. I'd like to start by reading from the King James Version, and I'm going to read Hosea 2:16, which is really Hosea, meaning he saves, 2:16. But I'm going to read this, and it says, "It shall be at that day, saith the Lord, that thou shalt call me Ishi, and shalt no more call me Bali, for I will take away names of Balaam out of her mouth, and they shall no more be remembered by their name." Now, I'm going to look at the Dead Sea Scrolls, which is extant material, and we're going to see what it really says. And what it says here is wa, or and, it shall be haya, which is existence, by the way, and haya is the basis for Yah's name. "And it shall be in that specific day, prophetically declares Yahweh, you shall encounter me as an individual and will no longer call me my Lord ever again. For I'll remove accordingly the Lord's names out of her mouth, and she shall not be remembered, recalled, or mentioned by their name ever again." So what we have here is Yahweh, and this is a very profound statement. "You shall encounter and welcome me as an individual." Now, when you welcome and when you encounter somebody and you welcome them, typically, what do, Scott?
You welcome someone?
When you welcome or greet someone, typically, what do?
You greet them, shake their hand, say hello.
Well, what do you think, Robin, what do you think most people's idea of being in front of the creator of all existence in the universe, if they were to meet him, what do you think their idea would be?
Maybe to fall to the ground?
Yeah, and get on their knees, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And that changes Yahweh's very nature, doesn't it?
Well, it sure does. And just as he told Abram to rise and stand, you know, be upright, I'm sure that's what he would want them to do. But people that do that don't know him.
Right. The people that are bowing and getting on their knees, these are people judged. You know, when he says every knee bows, you know, the family's already with Yahweh at that point. The rest of the world is the one in judgment. You don't want to be on the other end of judgment. You want to be viewed as family. Therefore, you're covered in the Ruach. You are set apart. You are not judged. Because the moment you're judged, for all your good thoughts, your good intentions, and your good heart, you're dead, aren't you?
Yes, unless you're adopted.
Well, but you're not judged if you're adopted.
Not judged, no.
No, so the minute you're judged, you're dead.
That's right.
So, you know, it's important that people come to understand Torah does not mean law. It means instruction, teaching, direction. But the translations always make it law. Yahweh's name is not Lord. He doesn't lord over us. He doesn't command. He gives prescriptions of life, and he makes invitations to us. And those invitations include the seven invitations that are played out, by the way, in human history, beginning with Pesach, today known as Passover, and the next day is unleavened bread, which was originally called matzah, and then we go right into what?
Bikurim.
And then 50 days later, Shavuah.
Yeah.
Teruah, Kippurim, and then Sukkah. Sukkah represents the 1,000 years that Yahweh will camp out with who? His family.
His family, his adopted children.
And those people, when they encounter him, how are they going to do that? Are they going to get on their knees and bow and be in submission like Ishmael, or are they going to be like Yitzhak, be smiling, and they encounter and welcome Yahweh as an individual? Which are they going to do?
The adopted children?
Yes.
Will come boldly, call him by name, and as for me, I'm fixing to jump in his chair.
There you go. And hopefully, we've laid out the difference between the relationship and the religion. And the religion is a corruption. Relationship is what Yah was interested in. Thank you for listening today, and we'll be back on the air tomorrow with another edition of Shattering Myths.